Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
And this rep who, at the beginning, I was like, I'm going after this rep. Like I was a pretty confident and experienced actor at this point already. So I was like, okay, I'm aiming for this guy. And he said to me, we need Asian female actors like you, but we don't need you.
If this is your first time tuning in, this is the show where I speak to fellow actors about their journey in the industry, and I make them share a couple of embarrassing audition stories with me. What's been happening, y'all? I hope you're all safe from that solar eclipse. Fun stuff, huh? I don't have a whole lot to say at the top of the show. You know, I've been working a lot. I feel like auditions are finally picking up again, which is really cool. And been working on a lot of cool stuff within the Young Performers Committee at SAG-AFTRA, so I've been pretty focused on stuff over there. That's all I got for now, so let's just hop into things. Today on the show, I have Gina Su. You have more than likely heard her voice in several different Netflix and Disney TV shows, and now you're going to hear her voice here as we talk about her journey as a dubbing artist, a filmmaker, an actress, and all of the awesome stuff that she's up to. So here's my conversation with Gina. And welcome to the show, Gina!
Yay! Hi! I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. One of my favorite types of people to interview is fellow female filmmakers, so I'm super stoked to have you on and talk about all the cool stuff that you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so cool that we can chat with each other, being people who make our own films along with acting.
Yes, you know? Yes. Because we're crazy. Might as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I started like, oh, I'm going to just do the traditional actor route. And then I'm like, I don't want to wait for stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just going to make my own. And then filmmaking turned out to be such a fun process.
I fully agree. And like, yes, that is essentially what happened to me as well. And I want to get into that. But before we get into all the filmmaking and wonderfulness that you're doing, I want to take it back and go to the very first thing that I love to ask people, which is, what made you want to be an actor?
Oh, I say film and TV shows were my babysitter. Mm. Like growing up in an immigrant family with parents who didn't speak perfect English, I was like learning English. I was learning how to be quote unquote American, how to make friends at school, how to feel and cry and have a crush on someone. And I really felt like I learned all of that through film and TV. And then when I realized it was a profession, I was like, whoa, I can do that for other people, make people feel less alone. That's when I was like, okay, this is what I want to do.
I love that. I've had a few people on the show in the past who have had similar types of stories where their families were immigrants coming to America, and it helped their parents to learn English and learn the language.
Yeah.
And I think that's so epic that like what we do can do that for people.
Yeah. And it's so amazing. Like when I'm traveling and talking to people who we don't speak the same language, but like we both love Jurassic Park. Like how cool is it to like connect, you know, on something that's a movie that's fun and made up, like so awesome.
So true. So we know why you wanted to be an actor. What was like the first step of you becoming a professional actor? Did you go to college for it? What was like the route for you?
Oh my gosh, I wish I went to college for it. I didn't know until later on. So I started out as a dancer and I was like, I want to be Britney Spears backup dancer.
Love that.
That was my goal. And my mom was like, hell no. There's no way you're doing that. So dance and also visual arts was what I studied, high school into college. And I just was like going as much adjacent to acting as possible, especially when it was like not a career option. I worked at a PR firm. I worked at a tech startup in the Bay Area. And round all the way roundabout, it wasn't until I started my own coaching business. I was coaching recent college grads about how to find their footing in the corporate world, and just to find their own fulfillment and alignment in life in general. And I was like, hey, I'm coaching other people to like follow their dreams, you know?
You're like, maybe like, I should take my own advice.
That's exactly what happened. I was like, huh, I should start walking my talk. And so I started doing commercial acting in the Bay Area. And it was so, it was like beginner's luck. I was booking once every 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
And the paychecks I was getting, I was like, I could make a living doing this for reals. And then I just, you know, I started canceling on my coaching clients because I had so many back then in-person auditions. And I figured, you know, let's just go all out. Let's move to LA and start acting for real and do theatrical acting as well. So that's how it started.
And what did your parents say?
They were still confused as heck. But they, I was born and raised in LA, so I was coming home.
Okay.
So that they were happy about. But still, they're like, and so you made a film. How much money did that film make? I'm like, I can't explain all like, this to you guys.
It's fine, guys. Just know I'm paying my bills and I'm happy.
Seriously, I had a family tax person. His name's Manuel, which my husband laughs at. He's like, you have a tax person named Manuel. And he was like, if your films aren't making any money, like my indie short films, he's like, you need to put it on YouTube and make money that way. And I'm like, thanks, tax guy. I'll take your tips for...
Thank you so much. Let me just get straight into that monetization.
Yes, yes. That is exactly what we make films for.
That's amazing. Wow. So you moved to LA and you decide, hey, we're going to make this a full-time thing.
Yep.
How did you like... Because you obviously have roots here. So how did you find, you know, your agent, everything like that when coming to LA? I think that's, you know, one of the biggest things that young actors struggle with is finding their person who's going to pitch them or, you know, what classes to go to. Like, were you just Googling? What was going on?
Yeah, I'm super type A. So I started reaching out to agents before I came
Heck
here.
Yeah.
So I locked in. Yeah, I locked in an agent before I came here. I got my manager during COVID, which was a few years later. And I taking class really helped me. I took Leslie Kahn, which if you know them, they have this crazy intensive beginning class, and you see each other, all the other actors, like three hours a day for 5 days a week. And then just suddenly made friends there. And I love to ask people questions. Like anytime I meet an actor who's a few steps ahead of me, I'm like, who's your rep and how did you get them? And obviously did some crazy IMDb searching for reps as well.
Of course. I mean, IMDb, the actor's savior.
Yeah, seriously, our handbook.
So what was like the first project that you worked on in LA where you're like, okay, I'm finding my footing. I think I'm in the right direction now. Do you remember what that was and what it was like for you on set?
Oh my gosh. Oh, my first co-star was The Bold and the Beautiful, a soap opera on CBS. And I lived like 10 minutes from the CBS studio. I remember driving by it and I'm like, one day I will drive into that lot and that is where I'm going to work. And a few months later it happened. And, you know, soap operas, they move so fast. Everyone is like a moving machine. It was so awesome to just hop in, do my role, hop out. And I'm like, wow, that was like such a streamlined professional experience for my first time. and I loved it. So
soap operas are a whirlwind, man. You're in, you're out. You're like, yeah, you've done some. What happened? yeah. I was on a soap opera when I was a kid for about a year and a half ish. But it was
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's great learning ground. And I think it's awesome that that was like your first experience too, because what an introduction to like, hey, this is how you literally show up, do your job and leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Very quick in and out. Like, obviously waited for way longer than ever being on screen. And you're like, oh, that's how that works. Okay.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll be right back. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. And back to the show.
I was just watching your fighting scene and I was like, dang, she's kick ass. Tell me all about it.
Okay. So this is a now friend who made a pilot called SantaCon, The War on Christmas. Amazing. Do you know about SantaCon in New York?
I don't.
So it's one day out of the year. I forget. It's like a couple days before Christmas. It's like a bar hopping thing where all the young people in New York dress up as Santa Claus and they just go like from bar to bar drinking, and it's just like drunk Santas everywhere.
Oh,
and it's called SantaCon.
So they made a pilot about this?
Yes, they made a pilot about this because it kind of like wreaks like it's havoc on the whole city and on all the bars, and you know, the streets get littered and glasses get broken, all that stuff. So they made a pilot on this, and I play one of the seasoned waitresses in this bar who have to like handle all these people, and I end up like fighting a lot of drunk Santas and like putting them in their place and teaching a new waitress what it's like to work at this bar.
I saw the scene on your Instagram, yeah, and I was like, this is the most chaotic, incredible thing, and she's just kicking ass right now. What is this?
Yeah, I got to use my first breakaway bottle on that set. Nice. And worked with one of those. You know, Cole, who does the high-speed slow-motion cameras on the Oscar red carpets? I got to use, not use, work with one of those cameras, which can be very dangerous. It's intense.
Really?
Yeah, because they move so fast and we're doing a fight scene. So it was okay, like, remember, it's going to go to the right and go to the left and then you're going to cross. So just don't walk into where it will eventually end
up. So if you aren't coordinated, you're screwed.
Yeah, like you could get seriously, seriously injured.
Oh my God. That's so crazy. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about your dubbing career. I think it's something that a lot of people don't realize is like a full-time gig as well. I mean, dubbing is so cool. And you dub so many shows and it's incredible. So I'd love to know like how you got into that world and what maybe your favorite project is that you've done so far.
Yeah, for sure. Have you dubbed anything before?
I've done like ADR for things that I've been in, and then I've done like, you know, loop groups and stuff like that, but I've never dubbed like a full character.
Oh my gosh, I feel like you'd be so good at it. Yeah, yeah, and you have such a great voice. Dubbing is wild because you're doing the voice of an actor who's already done the scene and shot the scene, and they're gone, and now you're stepping in to do it in another language. So I've done shows in Thai, Japanese, Korean, all into English. And it's crazy because sometimes we have to change what they're saying. What we focus on as dubbing artists is the lip flaps. And so let's say in a language, you know, I love you has six kind of syllables or six lip flaps. But in English, I love you has three. And so we have to change that to like, I love you so much. The person's name, Dan, or something. So anytime I tell people, like, I dubbed a new, like, project, I do a lot of Netflix and Disney projects, I'm excited to tell people, but I'm also like, please watch the original and, like, listen to the original actor's voice and in that language because they have intonations and just ways of expressing that's different from English, and I super value that. So it's weird to be like, watch the project I did, but I recommend you see it in the OG version.
I think that's so respectable though. I think dubbing is so wild because since you're taking it from another language, you know, acting is like it's half your voice, right? Half how you how you pause, how you speak, if you're gonna take a breath at a certain point in a scene. And so it's so interesting because I think dubbing is like this beautiful art where two people can become one, and it's so cool to watch.
It's so cool, and it's so fun to do because they play the scene for you once, and then you dub the second time. Geez. And typically, I don't even know what show I'm dubbing for until I get in the booth. They're like, "This is some crazy zombie show," which I think was my favorite. It's called Sweet Home. It was just like running and killing zombies, and then the next time I'm there, it's like you're playing a kid on a Korean family drama. I'm like, oh, okay, great.
Wow.
So yeah, it's tons of fun.
That is so epic. I love that. I want to do it. Tell me about, okay, now let's get into the filmmaking side of things here. You have a new fantasy short, Autopilot, that you're also going to be making into a feature, I hear, which is fantastic. But I'd love to know, you said a little bit about why you got into filmmaking, that you were tired of waiting around, which I fully feel. Yeah. I mean, when I was like, I think I was like 16 and I'd gotten to that age where like 18-year-olds were playing all the 16-year-olds. And so I wasn't booking anymore like I was when I was a kid. And I was like, what's going on? I'm the same person. I have the same skills. I don't understand. And so then I just started like making things with my friends. And then I just never stopped. Because you get addicted to it, right? But what was that like push for you? And what was the first thing that you said, okay, I'm going to take this on and we're going to figure out how to do it?
I joined a singing class in Pasadena, And I was like, I'm going to learn how to sing because I can dance and I can act and I want to learn how to sing. I was the only person like under 65 years old. Wow. In this class. It was a bunch of just like older women and men who just like wanted to be part of a choir and learn. And I'm like, I am in the wrong place, but they were so lovely.
Say, that's actually really cute. I kind of want to film about that.
Yes. And so that's what my first film was about. So my first film is called Blue, and it's a dramedy about an unlikely friendship, about a girl who, you know, messed up in life and had to do some like mandatory volunteer work at an old folks' home where they looped her into their singing group. So it was kind of like based on a true story.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah. I need to see it. Send
me. I totally will. I mean, well, you know how this goes. It was my first film, so there's that. And also, it's crazy how you make a film, you know, 2 years later, you're done. And you're like, I think I'm a better filmmaker than the film I just finished. Mm-hmm. And I realize, oh, that process doesn't stop. There's no way I can catch up to it.
Nope. You are constantly. Yeah. I think, but isn't that like the ultimate artist struggle is like, you're always trying to outdo yourself, like outbest yourself, and because you're always learning. And that's the thing about art is like you never stop learning new techniques, new things. There's never, you know, a point where you're like, I don't have anything I want to try. When is an artist ever? Like, there's so many things I want to try or want to do that I think, I mean, that's like the perfect, little flag that says, hi, yes, you're a filmmaker. Continue to make films.
Yep, totally. Totally.
So what was the inspiration behind Autopilot?
So Blue I wrote, and then Autopilot I also started writing, and it wasn't Autopilot. It was called H27 when I lived in Hawaii during the pandemic, and I had never written sci-fi before. So I wrote this sci-fi short where someone travels between where they are to this like crazy other world, which I was going to shoot in Kauai. There's this like red dirt area and it literally looks like you're on Mars. So that was the inspiration. And my first go at it, I wrote this thing and I sent it to my now co-producer, who is also a writer and director. And she was like, this is awesome, but I have a better idea. Ooh. And so she wrote something else completely different based off of a single location here in a soundstage in Los Angeles and sent it back to me. And I'm like, girl, I like yours way better. Let's make that. And so that was Autopilot. And it's gone to Fantasia and Nevermore and FilmQuest and screened in 5 different continents. Wow. And we've won 5 awards so far and had 18 film festival selections. So I'm so grateful that she sent it back to me and was like, take a look at this.
That's girl power.
I know, right? Seriously.
What is, if you can, tell the listeners a little bit about what the film is about.
Okay, so it's about a female pilot in space by herself in the future. And she has a virtual companion, which is just like a holographic person who spends time with her to like keep her from going crazy on this solo trip. But that virtual companion starts acting out. And so it becomes a little bit of a suspense thriller short.
Never trust technology.
I know, right? And this was like before all this AI stuff started happening. So by the time our film came out, we're like, oh, this is very timely and kind of scary.
Kind of scary. Listen, I knew not to trust technology when Smart Home came out on the Disney Channel. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yes.
Smart Home, Smart House, whatever it was. That movie scared the crap out of me.
Yeah. Yeah, the oven opened up and did stuff. And like,
We don't need this. Well, that sounds so exciting. And I read that you wanted to make it into a feature. So what is like your process with that now? Are you guys in the middle of writing still? Or what stage is that at?
So it is already finished. And we weren't originally going to make it into a feature. It's because it did so well in the festival circuit. Jennifer Zhang, my co-producer, was like, I think we should make something more of this. So it's an anthology feature in which the short film will be in its entirety in the feature, which is really cool. And it's more about AI. And we are trying to cast our main lead. So we're in that process. And the script is done. So once someone is on board, we're going to start pre-production.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yay.
Yeah.
Well,
you know how it goes, right?
Yes. Speaking of casting, that pulled it in perfectly. Yeah. On the show, I like to make people share audition stories with me.
Oh,
it can be something funny. It can be something horrible. It can be anything in between. Is there a story that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yes. This one is, I feel like, horrible in my mind, I guess.
Solid.
You know? So I'll give you one of those. It wasn't for a particular show or role. It was for a workshop. So I did one of those 1 week go to Atlanta, stay in a hotel with a bunch of other actors and meet managers, agents, and casting directors in Atlanta. And this was long before COVID when, you know, Atlanta was more open to Los Angeles actors. So I did one of those and I had a multicam comedy prepared for it, which I had done for workshops before. So it was getting a little bit overdone. Do you know that feeling when you're like, oh, I've done this a million times? But it was still a really good scene. So I was there with my friend, who I like to call my acting older brother. We met a while back, and he's also Asian, and he's like, I'm your older brother in this industry. So he was there as well. And right before I did it in front of a panel of agents and managers, he's like, do your scene. I want to see it since I'm reading with you. And I did it for him, and him and a few other actors loved it, had a great laugh. And they're like, and he said, what if you did this part like this way? And I'm like, okay, cool. I know this scene front to back. Let me like mess around with it. So I did it one more time, messed around with it. And it's like, awesome. Oh, now I want to try this thing. I just like got so creative and fun with this thing, because it was in my bones, that by the time I went in and did this scene with them, I was making choices on the fly. I was like, you know, like choices like, oh, I can't, I'm thinking of this new idea. Where is it? Let me just grab it out of here. And this is my new idea in this scene, because my character is like pitching an idea. And it was one of the worst scenes I've ever done in my life. It was like, I was like, you know, like I was hyped up on four cups of coffee. And this rep who at the beginning, I was like, I'm going after this rep. Like I was a pretty confident and experienced actor at this point already. So I was like, okay, I'm aiming for this guy. And he said to me, we need Asian female actors like you, but we don't need you. Yeah, it was brutal. I was like, oh, damn. Okay. But honestly, I have to tell you,
like, what do you even say to that person? Thank you.
Oh yeah. I was frozen. I was like, all right. But you know what was interesting? I knew that it was, you know, an awful scene. Like that one performance that I did was not my best work. So I knew in my gut that that was like a one-off wacky moment that happened. And I never felt so, I was disappointed, but I was very, like, overjoyed with ambition afterwards. Like, I was like, okay, I'm just going to turn everything on and get laser focused. Next time I, like, won't have other actors give me ideas or have me change what I already have prepared. And also, if I don't want to do it 10 times before I do it for the actual people, I'll also say no. Yeah. Like, I learned so many lessons. This was probably like 7 years ago. So it was a long time ago. And I'm like, it's good ammo to be. One day they will need an actor like me and I will not be available.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That's the perfect vengeance right there.
Yeah.
I can't believe he said that to your face, though. Like, I just, that's.
Well, I found out later on that he's not the most lovely rep. And I had a friend, you know, leave that agency. And so maybe the universe had my back
yeah.
in some way.
100%.
You know? But yes, isn't that intense?
That's really intense. Holy Lord. But like, I also love that you left it saying, you know what, screw that guy. I'm going to be the best version of me, and I'm going to stick to my guns, and I'm going to do what's good for me and not listen to anybody else. Because that's like the number one most important lesson, I think, for any artist, right? Is sticking to your authenticity, being yourself, and consistently going after what it is that you want out of this life.
Yeah. I mean, I have so much respect for you because you started as a child actor, because I feel like I'm grateful that I started later because I could be able to handle stuff like that. If that happened to me as a kid, I don't know, I probably wouldn't be acting anymore.
There,
you know?
Yeah, I get it. You know, I never had like any wild experiences in the room when I was a kid, luckily, but I do remember there was always like one casting director growing up that like everyone knew was really harsh, and you would see like every once in a while kids like coming out crying, and you're like, this isn't a sad scene. So what happened in there? Like, this is a comedy.
Oh my goodness.
So I think, you know, maybe I just got lucky, or, you know, I do credit my parents a lot to the, you know, the stable life that I had outside of acting. And I also just think that I was an actor as a kid, but I never hit like a level of fame, which was fantastic. You know, there was never any pressure on me. I just got to act because I liked acting.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so lucky. And I love that you mentioned your family and like a lovely, stable childhood, because when we're as characters, we're still reflecting in our own lives, like where we are mentally matters so much with our ability to act. And so I also had a safe, loving home, and I'm so grateful for that, because this work is hard to do without that.
So true.
You know?
So true.
Yeah.
Well, what's next? I mean, obviously you're working on Autopilot. What else do you got coming up, or is there anything that you can share with us?
Yeah. So on Friday, I'm leaving to shoot a feature film. So I'm like starting to pack my stuff. Autopilot, once we get the person casted, we'll go into pre-production, and our hope is to shoot that this year, most likely in the summer. And I am writing and acting in an action short with my husband.
Oh, fun.
It'll be his first time directing, so super fun. And then I'm writing an Asian rom-com. So I have, what, like 4 or 5 projects at the same time, but this is how I like it.
Plus, like, you know, you gotta different projects call for different feelings. And some days you're just not feeling like you want to write the rom-com. You want to go over to do the action or whatever it is. Go back and forth.
Exactly that.
That's awesome. Well, I can't wait to see all of these incredible things. How can people find you on social media to keep up?
Oh, awesome. I am at only on Instagram, Miss Gina Su, spelled MissGinasu. And send me a message. Say hi. I started a broadcast channel so people can join if they want to see what I'm up to health and wellness wise outside of acting.
Very cool. Well, it has been a pleasure having you on the show, and I can't wait to see all of the fun things that you're cooking up.
Awesome. You're so lovely. I really appreciate this.
Thanks again to Gina for coming on the show and hanging out with me. Tune in a couple weeks when we have another guest on the show. I'm really liking this bi-weekly stuff, y'all. It really kind of takes a little bit of the pressure off of me, which has been very nice. I have to say, weekly shows is a lot when you have, like, you know, other jobs. So thanks for sticking around while we turned into a bi-weekly show. If you're not following the show on Instagram, make sure to head on over there, hit that follow button. You can follow us on TikTok as well. We also have a YouTube, so you should go check all of that stuff out. And we'll see you around next time. As always, thanks for coming in.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Shared Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.